the 24-hour news cycle has become a controversial mainstay of American political life, but TV news hasn't always been this way. In the early days of cable television, there was a lot of optimism about how it could be a force for public participation and democracy. Here's CNN founder Ted Turner announcing the launch of the channel back in 1979.
This news service will be called the Cable News Network, and will program continually updated half-hour segments of national news, business news, sports, and features 24 hours a day. I know that we will succeed, and I pledge to you that we will not let the American public down.
The rise of CNN is just one part of a much bigger story about cable television and how it came to be a dominant force in American politics. Our next guest chronicles that history in her new book, which shows how cable TV in many ways failed to live up to its political promises and ultimately set the stage for the fracturing and polarization we see today. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you watch news programming on cable TV, one network, lots of networks, or do you steer clear of it? Either way, why? Has TV been a big part of your own political identity? Has that changed over the years? Were you around for the early days of the rise of 24-hour cable news channels? How did your political viewing change at that point? Were you ever a big C-SPAN fan? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Catherine Kramer Brownell is an associate professor of history at Purdue University. Her newest book is called 24/7 Politics: Cable Television and the Fragmenting of America from Watergate to Fox News. Catherine, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
You trace the technology, the spread of cable TV, going back as far as the late 1940s, which I didn't know. I want to fast forward a little bit to that moment when CNN and around the same time-ish C-SPAN come around. Remind us what the TV news landscape looked like before those big cable networks came along.
Yeah, that's really a transformative moment for the cable industry. C-SPAN launches in 1979 and then CNN the following year. And before that, people got their news on television in, 22 minutes, maybe an hour in a documentary series, but it was very limited. And this was part of the problem. People across the political spectrum could agree that having so little time devoted to informing the public about public affairs meant that they weren't getting the information they needed, that viewpoints were inherently excluded, especially if they are on the far left or the far right of the political spectrum. And so it's this effort to change news coverage that really motivates a diverse range of people to see the possibilities of cable television and having a more expansive dial and having more programs that didn't have to just cater to those half hour or 1 hour time slots.
And now CNN, it's become such an institution, it's hard to think of it as a scrappy underdog, but it and some other parts of the cable content and cable industry really throwing a lot of elbows out there trying to break what they claimed was in effect a monopoly of the TV networks. Can you talk about how that played out in the early days?
Yeah, during the 1960s and especially into the 1970s, network broadcast television had a monopoly. It was regulated by the FCC to control and to dominate the television landscape. And initially, cable TV emerged as simply a way to extend the signals of broadcasting to areas that couldn't access them, but because of terrain or distance. And so it really replicated and expanded broadcasting fare. But as frustrations with broadcasting mounted, cable TV operators realized that there is a business opportunity in playing up the limitations of broadcasting and selling cable not as an extension of broadcasting, but as an alternative, as a competitor, which could give more voice to these demands for diversity of perspectives on in television.
Yeah, there was a political workshop. You start off the book actually in 1984 discussing how broadcasting had failed democracy and how cable could save it. That was the argument from the cable industry. Were there wider hopes from people in the political world and beyond that, yes, this is going to boost our public participation? This is going to make democracy better because we have more sources of information.
think there absolutely were hopes, and there were many people within the cable industry and activists, many grassroots activists outside of the industry that truly believed that decentralizing information would enhance democracy because it would get so many different viewpoints and different perspectives out there to shape conversations, to shape American culture, but to shape American politics as well. But ultimately, what happens is that this democratic promise really becomes a public relations tool by the cable operators who see that highlighting the problems of democracy and the potential of the democratic potential of cable is good for business. It's good for business because it allows them to craft some very effective relationships with elected officials. C-SPAN, for example, is a nonprofit, but the way that Brian Lamb got people, cable operators, to buy into that concept was he understood that he told them that if you want elected officials to know what cable is and to work to invest or to expand its reach, you need to give them a stake in it, to bring cable to Capitol Hill. And that's exactly what C-SPAN ultimately does. And so there's this effort to shape regulatory policies and to really advance more favorable regulations by forging these relationships with elected officials, but also just making money by selling, getting people to buy in, getting subscribers to buy in, that they can find community and civic participation, and perhaps more importantly, sports and entertainment on the cable dial. So it's a multi-pronged effort that's really about expanding the business of cable television.
Talking to Catherine Kramer Brownell about her new book, 24/7 Politics, Cable Television and the Fragmenting of America from Watergate to Fox News. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your memories at 800-642-1234. Catherine, you were just talking about how the cable industry was reaching out to politicians. You also cover a lot in the book how politicians started to realize that, hey, these things are changing the game. They're changing our PR, our outreach. What were some of the first shoots of that as people realized what they could do with cable?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So cable does open up TV to new voices. And overwhelmingly, it's those who are frustrated, who are not finding opportunities on network broadcasting programs, that they are turning to cable out of desperation. And so there are a variety of different experimental strategies. Ones deployed by some fringe people, especially you see this in the Republican Party in the 1980s, where figures like Newt Gingrich were a minority, kind of a fringe member of the minority party in Congress at this time. And he's using something like C-SPAN. He's manipulating the camera angle, manipulating coverage to get his ideas out there and to build a national following. He's not using cable to talk to his constituents back in Georgia. He's trying to create conflict on C-SPAN. Frequently and overwhelmingly, initially, this happens to an empty chamber where he's making these grand speeches, making viewers think that he's, you know, calling out opponents and they're scared to challenge him. But in fact, he's talking to an empty chamber. And I think it's an example of kind of the political manipulations and calculations over how to use cable TV are very much at play, with politicians thinking about how they can use it to their political advantage, not necessarily to inform constituents, but to really help them gain more political power.
Let's bring on a caller. Chris is with us in Fairchild. Chris, hi.
Hi. So I just try to be careful here with the use of language surrounding what we see nowadays. When we say something that's such and such news organization, news would imply something that's factual, perhaps trustworthy, fact-checked, and then more often than not, it is opinion and editorial, kind of pointed towards a specific audience than really an unbiased, you know, factual bias of what's going on.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. And an interesting point, Catherine, the blurring that happens over time on cable between news and, as Chris says, opinion and editorial.
Chris is exactly right. And that blurring happens over, you know, really from the 1960s through the 1990s, you have a triumph of that blurring by the 1990s. And part of the reason that that becomes blurred is because you have a shift in the idea of the public interest. Increasingly, the public interest, which used to be why upholding this public interest requirement used to be why network broadcast news programs existed as proof that they were serving, they had this civic role. That ultimately fades away as the media landscape becomes deregulated and the consumer interest becomes conflated with the public interest. And then it becomes all about what is going to sell, what's going to get ratings, what's going to generate attention rather than necessarily what is going to inform people about the world around them. There's this really interesting moment I chart in the book where you have Walter Cronkite raising concern about the consumer interest overwhelming the public interest. And one cable operator, John Malone, says, no, the people will demand, the market will demand accuracy and factual information. But I think that we've seen that that's not necessarily what has happened.
Chris, thanks for the call. We're talking to Catherine Kramer Brownell from Purdue University, looking at her new book. It's called 24/7 Politics, Cable Television and the Fragmenting of America from Watergate to Fox News. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think the 24-hour news cycle has been helpful or harmful when it comes to informing the public? Are there any cable channels or programs that you think have been a force for good in American politics at some point? Or do you think it's been mostly negative over the last few decades? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with historian Catherine Kramer Brownell about her new book, 24/7 Politics, Cable Television, and the Fragmenting of America from Watergate to Fox News. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you there for the major moments in political history that aired on cable TV? Do you remember the switch when cable TV got big, especially in the news? Do you watch any of the big networks now? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls. Mark is with us in Green Bay. Mark, hi.
How's it going? I was wondering what she thought of how the elimination of the fairness doctrine by Reagan had an effect on this. And then also Fox just got sued by Dominion for $700 million. How will stuff like that keep things like Fox in check?
Mark, thanks for the call. Two big points there, Catherine. First of all, you do in the book talk a lot about the fairness doctrine and its passing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the fairness doctrine is part of that the embrace of deregulation, the reliance on the marketplace to deliver for democratic debate. And, it's interesting, Mark Fowler, the FCC chair under Reagan, you know, tries to eliminate the fairness doctrine. And, you know, there's a bipartisan coalition that comes together to try to ingrain it in law via legislation. But ultimately, Ronald Reagan vetoes that bill. He says that we just need to allow ideas to compete in the marketplace. And so the fairness doctrine is really significant for the broadcast industry more broadly. And that's where you see its first ramifications. It allows, it kind of frees broadcasters. Cable operators weren't always regulated by that as well. It was very murky as to whether it applied to cable operators or not. But it allows broadcasters, notably radio hosts like Rush Limbaugh, to kind of really double down on partisanship, double down on some of the tactics that proved really effective, like Newt Gingrich stoking outrage, to do that not just for maybe an hour at the end of the congressional day, but for an entire program nonstop. And so it allows this more partisan programming to tap into, again, the marketplace and to show that it can be very lucrative. And I think that's what you see. You know, Fox News emerges in 1996. It's looking at Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch are looking at Rush Limbaugh. They're looking at how he's able to use these tactics to stir outrage And to make a lot of money. And so that's really the business model behind Fox News. And I think that with the Dominion lawsuit, you see some, you know, this level of accountability that the market had not been able to provide. And so I think that, and it also kind of showed that Fox is pandering to what they think that their TV subscribers want, that they will do anything to try to keep their loyalty. And this, again, is a product of relying on the marketplace to deliver for democracy.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to John now in Eau Claire. John, hi.
Hey, I just wanted to share that one time I asked my 90-year-old father-in-law what was the biggest change that he ever saw in his lifetime. And he said the 24-hour news cycle and all the stress that it caused and all the potential for propaganda that it caused. And I remember being a little boy, probably in second, third grade, probably 1972. And I heard about the communists in Russia and how the little kids were propagandized by state media. And I remember feeling sorry for them. I mean, I truly felt sorry for these kids being propagandized in communist Russia. And today, the free cable media, but study after study shows that over 80% is tilted one way.
John, thanks a lot for the call. John's father-in-law says the 24-hour news cycle, the biggest change he saw in his lifetime. Catherine, you'd make the case it is a pretty big deal.
It really is significant because it's dramatically expanding the information that people have about the world around them. It's really decentralizing the news. And there are some benefits to this. Again, it brings new voices, new perspectives. The network broadcast television newsrooms run, you know, with Walter Cronkite at the center stage, those were incredibly exclusionary. They were elitist. They really did kind of adhere to a perspective of white heterosexual men. And so opening up the news really creates all of these possibilities. But again, it's always driven by the search for profits. Even Ted Turner, that great clip you played at the beginning, where CNN is launching to promise to deliver understanding and peace, Ted Turner wanted to make money. And so he's really finding different ways to do news on the cheap. So he wants to make news the star, is what he says. He doesn't want to pay someone like Walter Cronkite. Well, when there's breaking news, this provides people with access to information. But then what happens when there's not breaking news or there's not a crisis? Then you have the reliance on a lot of this commentary and more opinion-based shows. And that's where, again, to the earlier point, you get the conflating of news and entertainment that can it can really undermine public knowledge.
Talking to Catherine Kramer Brownell about her new book, 24/7 Politics, Cable Television, and the Fragmenting of America from Watergate to Fox News. I want to get to the fragmenting, Catherine, before we run out of time. You talk about in the book the incentive structure for politicians. Instead of trying to give a more general message to reach as much of the public as they can, you see cable changing the incentive to reaching a particular audience with particular messages. How does that change things?
Yeah, so the book really charts that you have this shift from broadcasting, right? Trying to appeal to broad audiences through radio and television. And so someone like Franklin Roosevelt is using the fireside chats to try to build popular support for his programs. And he's, you know, again, circumventing critics to speak directly to audiences. But again, the whole idea is to make his programs more likable. Cable is a little bit different because it relies on more narrow segments and mobilizing very vocal, narrow, smaller segments of the population. It's all about cultivating loyalty, not necessarily likability. Loyalty to individual brands, loyalty to individual lifestyles, infusing that with politics. And so it makes it more about kind of connecting to what is seen as the quote-unquote right demographic. demographics, those people that'll be more passionate, that'll be more engaged about politics, and that, and kind of eschewing that responsibility of reaching everybody, and that desire to build consensus around ideas, candidates, and policies.
And I think a lot of people would point at social media and the internet for doing the things you just said. You move that dial back a lot further with cable TV. That set us up, it seems, for the fragmented politics we have today.
Exactly. I think that the way in which social media has unfolded, this search for, you know, anything that will generate ratings and clicks, and what does that? You can see the business model time and time again shows that getting people angry is what can really motivate that business. It's not necessarily encouraging, an informed conversation or even a respectful conversation in any capacity. It's really tapping into that kind of cultivating different brands, different identities. And, you know, one of the things that cable introduces is it shows how profitable echo chambers can be. And I think that really is at the root of some of our polarization today in both media and politics.
Catherine, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me and for the conversation.
That was Catherine Kramer Brownell, Associate Professor of History at Purdue University. We've been talking about her new book. It's called 24/7 Politics, Cable Television, and the Fragmenting of America from Watergate to Fox News.